This is Tall Tale TV, your podcast for sci-fi and fantasy short stories. This story has multiple parts. To listen to the entire story in one place, visit talltaletv.com/series. Of Portals and Portents by Leslie Herron. Chapter 9, Nissanite.
Listen, I'm just saying, having Barry with us would make it far easier to get through this crowd.
Atlas danced around an old man and a tree that jutted up through the middle of the sidewalk.
You'd be surprised how many people just scurry out of the way when a bear comes strolling through town. And risk getting us spotted.
Rolling his eyes, Tragedy ducked down the nearest alley and disappeared into its enveloping darkness.
This is a stealth mission. Bears aren't common in Avis. Who cares if someone spots us? We left Dingle and Dongle back in Sharmore. They're the ones with a bounty on their heads, not us.
Tragedy groaned as he pressed his back against the house and peered around the edge of the wall. The street was empty, save for a few displaced people shuffling towards the center of town. He looked back over his shoulder.
Stop talking! I'm just stating facts here!
Atlas stuck a finger in his mouth, digging out a grape seed from between his teeth.
The two geniuses sent us into the city to steal an airship? What exactly makes it an airship?
Pinching the bridge of his nose, Tragedy willed himself to be calm.
It's a ship that flies through the air.
He stepped out onto the cobblestone path when the procession of locals had faded from view. He looked up and down the street, but it was no use. He was lost. So much of the city had changed in his absence. The presence of trees and a mile-wide river didn't help either. But at this point, one guess was as good as another, and he gave a half-shrug, mostly to himself, before stepping out into another darkened alley. He motioned for the mage to follow him.
You know, I probably should have been able to figure that out by context. How does something like that work? I imagine, like, a giant soap bubble with a sail, but that can't be right.
Atlas made a gesture with his hand, imitating the way it would move.
Oh my god, do you ever shut up?
Tragedy threw his hands in the air.
We need to find a way up to the docks, not gossip like old biddies.
At a loss for how to respond, Atlas merely followed in silence, staring at the back of the man's head as they made their way onto a more active street. There was something about him, with his ivory skin and pale blonde hair, almost statuesque.
Hey, can I ask you a question? No. Okay, that's fair.
Atlas snatched up a discarded broom and swung it, cracking the handle neatly across the back of the other man's head. It exploded, showering them both with splinters, but the imposing figure had hardly reacted to the impact. Tragedy turned slowly around, his eyes dangerous slits.
Just checking.
Atlas tossed aside the remnants of the broom before taking several steps back, throwing his hands up in a warning gesture.
That wasn't an attack. I just had to make sure. I mean, I knew you weren't human, but your kind are so incredibly rare that I've never even seen one of you lot before.
A sly chuckle escaped his lips.
Almost helped make one, but never seen one.
Confusion pulled Tragedy back a step.
I mean, sure, it's kind of taboo and not usually a good idea. A bit dangerous, if you ask me.
Atlas stroked his chin as his mind wandered for a moment.
But, it happens once in a while. So, who was it? Your mom or your da? Oi.
His mind was racing, but all Tragedy could do was take another step back.
What am I?
A gentle smile graced Atlas's features.
A stone Goliath. Well, half of one.
The The sigh of relief that left Tragedy sounded almost like laughter as he shook his head.
Wrong. My father is human.
Obviously.
Atlas gave a lofty wave of his hand.
But I know a half-breed when I see one. So that means it was your mother.
He offered the other man a knowing wiggle of his brows.
I figured the other way is just, painful.
Responding before his brain could tell him otherwise, Tragedy snatched the man by the front of his garish robes and lifted him up, his feet dangling, before slamming him against a wall.
Do not speak of my mother.
He and his sister had been found as babies by the clergy, abandoned on the steps of the church in the middle of the night. He was told otherwise, but he chose to believe she had no choice, that she had given them up in order to save them. Atlas shook his head as he batted uselessly at the man.
That wasn't an insult. You've obviously never seen a female Goliath.
His mind wandered to Nadija.
Let's just say, oh, I can't blame your old man.
As the mage's hand struck his wound, a jolt of pain erupted in Tragedy's injured forearm, causing him to drop the man and recoil. It was like fire and knives digging deep into his bones. He ripped back the sleeve of his shirt to reveal something protruding from the torn flesh. It was a marble-sized chunk of purple stone. Wide-eyed, his fingers shook as he reached over to touch it. More pain erupted through his forearm, and he yelped in surprise.
I don't think that's a good sign.
Atlas raised an eyebrow as he picked himself up.
I may have skived off in my lessons in remedial healing and herbs, but maybe you should have Dingle or Dongle look at that when we get back.
Hey, what are you two doing?
Looking up, Atlas noticed a pair of guards had seen their altercation and were jogging their way, waving down reinforcements. He turned back to his companion, clapping him on the shoulder.
You okay to run?
Tragedy wrenched the fabric back over his wound and shoved off the mage's concern.
I'm fine.
Turning, he began to sprint downhill, away from the gathering group.
The docks are this way.
As they ran, his mind wandered back to his mother. Even though he hadn't thought about her in years, he couldn't help but circle back to the question. Had she willingly left two small babies to grow up alone? Broken homes and shattered paths finally gave way to open intersections and flowing foot traffic. Chester breathed a sigh of relief to see much of the city had remained intact. It was a bit tattered, and the new river was overflowing into the canal, creating a caustic perfume in the air. But his city still lived. A rush of bodies swarmed around him, joining in with the rescue efforts or seeking help.
Prime Minister!
Chester turned at the sound of his title to see a young man wearing white robes running towards him. He didn't recognize this parishioner, but how could he? Their ranks had been growing faster than he could keep up with.
Hello, Father...
The man bowed slightly, pausing to catch his breath.
Dylan, sir, oh, thank the scholar you live. When the plate fell and you couldn't be located, we thought...
I know.
Chester lifted his hand with a heavy sigh.
What of the survivors? Who is overseeing this rescue operation?
Dylan pointed at a gathering of monks and civilians alike. A woman at the center was directing teams of workers and robots with the grace of a music conductor. A tiny smile creased the corners of Chester's mouth. Through the medley of white robes, glinting copper armor, and stern-faced civilians, was a familiar head of platinum blonde hair. He clapped the monk on the shoulder and darted off down the road towards her, his shoes slipping on the wet cobblestones.
Danny!
At the sound of her name, she looked up to see the Prime Minister, practically uninjured, running towards her. Danny's face beamed and she pushed her way between several groups to meet him in the street.
Father!
Chester threw his arms around her, squeezing her tight. When she made a small noise of pain, he relinquished his grip and stepped back. Her clothes were torn, her face was bruised and bloodstained, and her left arm hung limp at her side.
By the Skola, are you all right?
Denny looked over at her injured arm and gave a dismissive shake of her head.
I think it's just dislocated, but I haven't had the time to see a healer yet. There's too much to do.
She reached out and grabbed his hand, giving the fingers a gentle squeeze.
When I saw the plate fall, knowing you were still up there, I...
She shook the thoughts from her mind.
How did you survive?
You know that old cyborg is resourceful.
Chester waved his hand dismissively.
But now isn't the time. What's the situation?
With great effort, Denny pulled the clipboard from her other hand, wincing at the pain.
I've got several teams of robots scouring the most unstable sections of the city for survivors. Those we find who are injured or just displaced are being evacuated to the courtyards of the college, which remained relatively unscathed.
She used the clipboard to gesture off behind her.
The illuminated path is taking in as many as their churches can hold, but they're bound to run out of space and supplies soon. So we're asking anyone with anything extra to help out.
She dropped her hand, the fatigue setting in.
Also, some of the... She pursed her lips. Locals from whatever world we collided with are demanding an audience.
Demand?
Chester couldn't fight the baffling look that ran across his face.
That's hardly important. But what are the cause? The source of it all? What intel do we have, if any?
We have a confirmed sighting. Two men matching Elias's facial print destroyed one of the robotic sentries near the river. They fled before the others could arrive.
Denny offered her father a concerned look, unable to mask the fear she was feeling.
Chester frowned.
Two?
So Vel's sibling and Elias were working together. He dragged a hand across his mouth. That was less than ideal.
Okay, I'll take over for now.
He placed a hand on her good shoulder.
Please see a doctor before you get some rest.
He pushed up his sleeves, picked up the clipboard from her hand, and turned to the mass of gathering people and machines.
All right, listen up. I need teams of 3 and 7 to...
Her father's words faded from her ears as, for the first time that day, Danny felt a sense of relief and ease wash over her. With the return of the Prime Minister, hope could be rekindled. He had touched the lives of so many, even before they had elected him to office. If anyone could repair the damage, it would be him. At the sound of bodies setting into motion, Danny began to drag herself wearily toward the healers. But one of the gleaming copper robots, wearing a tall white chef's hat, came to a stop in her path.
Excuse me, Mom. I have returned from Sector C. There is no sign of the fugitives, but we did come across something you should see.
Danny watched as the robot reached into a compartment at its side and handed her something she had not expected to see. A mask of porcelain and bone. Roughly the shape of a shattered stag skull. Her breath caught in her throat as she turned it over to see that it was fashioned using the unmistakable visage of a tragedy play mask. She clutched it tight to her chest as tears began to well up in her eyes, blurring her vision. She had long wondered about her brother's fate after the fall. He had been so injured when he had vanished. But here was proof he was alive, and in Avis. It was wonderful, elating news, but also exceedingly terrible at the same time. Her gaze fluttered back towards her father, who frowned as he caught the look in her eyes.
Well, that's not something I was expecting to see.
Atlas ran a hand through his hair as he stared up towards what had presumably been the docks. Even from where they stood on the ground, they could see the remains of a dozen ships smashed against the floating structure, or hanging haphazardly from balloon tethers tangled in the mess of wire cables and metal beams. A thin line of smoke rose into the sky, signaling a fire was still burning somewhere above them. Tragedy stared open-mouthed and in awe at all the damage. He now realized that a good portion of the destruction to the surrounding city had been caused by the downed crafts as the two worlds collided, or by the rain of falling debris from the portions of the floating plate that had been shattered. As his eyes searched the destruction, there wasn't even so much as an undamaged lifeboat in sight. He believed in Elias's vision, but this...
Well, I assume you have a backup option?
Atlas pushed his hands against his hips, waiting for direction. Tragedy shook his head.
The Navy remains afloat, even in times of peace. It's just cheaper to resupply at the docks than to land and take off again.
Oh, come on! The entire fleet? I'm no sailor, but even I know ships have to be dry docked for repairs every now and then. Unless you got people just floating around, fixing things up in the air.
Tragedy gave the mage an appreciative look.
That's not a bad point.
Of course it's not. I made it.
Just shut up.
Tragedy threw his hand over the Arcanist's mouth. Ideas and memories were mingling in his brain as he struggled to remember something useful.
Okay.
An image of a large, bare-bones hangar came to mind.
In my time employed by the High Inquisitor, I remember a facility used to construct military airships. The project was put on hold once the fleet hit a certain size, but with any luck, repairs would be performed in the same general area.
He pulled his hand away and spun on the spot, gaining his bearings.
It should be somewhere in this direction.
He set off at a jog down another crumbling street, assuming the other man would follow. He jumped over fissures and ducked beneath upturned trees, making his way through the maze of a city until he skidded to a stop at a familiar intersection. The buildings here were mostly intact, and he could even see the hull of an airship inside one of the massive hangars. But he let out a small curse as the sunlight reflected off several patrolling mechanical bodies.
Well, this is it, but we have a problem.
He turned to face the Arcanist, only to find the man squatting on the ground and making cooing noises at a large orange tomcat.
Hey, focus!
Yeah, I'm listening!
Atlas scratched the tiny beast beneath its chin, smiling as his actions elicited a deep, thrumming purr.
Where did that thing come from, anyway?
He just came up to me. It's like he was saying, take me home.
A smile unfurled as Atlas thought of Barry's jealous face when he returned with a new companion. He looked down at the contented creature.
I don't know why, but he really strikes me as a Kevin. What do you think?
Opening his mouth to respond, Tragedy promptly closed it as he shook away the notion of arguing with the wizard over what to name a stray cat. It wasn't worth his time. Kevin was a horrible name for a cat.
Well, he might come in handy because the plan...
He paused to point at the large building.
...is for you to distract those sentries while I sneak in and get us a ship.
Whoa! I'm not going to be bait for your cannon fodder plan!
Atlas took a step back, lifting the cat protectively in his arms.
Kevin and I did not sign up for this.
Listen, all you have to do is draw the robots away so I can get inside the building. Just make a bunch of noise, pretend to need help, or set something on fire.
Tragedy let out a long groan.
Just wait for my signal and...
The words died in his throat as a burst of heat and wind cut him off when one of the buildings to the south of them erupted in a fiery explosion. Metal sheets of roofing and concrete blocks flew through the air and scattered the ground with deafening chaos. A terrified yowl filled the silence, and Atlas screamed as Kevin clawed his way forcibly out of the man's protective grip and fled in the opposite direction.
Oi! Kevin! Come back!
Tragedy slowly turned on the spot, rage filling his every fiber as he gazed upon the Arcanist. One hand was still pointing off in the direction of the explosion, smoke gently rising from the tip of one finger. He latched onto the man's robes, hauling him in close before he could run after the cat.
What the hell was that?
What? You said to light something on fire!
Halt! This is a restricted area.
Tragedy closed his eyes, not even needing to look up to realize that the sentries were headed in their direction.
Excuse me.
Please, just a moment.
Chester waved away the strange, bespectacled man and his followers to summon a healer before turning back to his daughter.
Listen, Danny, I am thrilled that Theodore is alive. I really am.
He motioned the doctor to her injured shoulder.
But we both know that there is only one course of action now. He wouldn't listen to reason back then. Why would he do so now?
Danny tried to shoo away the healer, but found their grip ironclad. She whipped her attention back to her father, stomping her foot in anger.
At least let me try. If we can reach him, excuse me!
Danny held up a warning finger on her good hand towards the impatient man.
Sir, we will deal with your issue in due course.
When he failed to argue farther, she breathed a sigh of relief. But that moment evaporated when the doctor, with one swift motion, set her shoulder back into her socket. A flurry of curses and suggestions about the healer's sexual exploits flew from her mouth, causing all those near to blush a deep shade of red. It took her several moments to compose herself, but Danny was able to return to the moment when the pain subsided.
Now, as I was saying...
Someone cleared their throat behind her, and she spun.
Oh, for the love of... What now?
Ma'am, we have just received a transmission from Unit 65783, designation Handyman, that someone is attacking Warship Repair Bay 6.
Her eyes went wide.
Elias?
The reports have neither confirmed nor denied his presence.
The copper robot shook his head.
But the damage has become substantial.
She exchanged a glance with her father. Chester set his jaw.
Instruct any fellow units in the vicinity to assist, and get us to the scene as fast as you can.
He tried to avoid the pleading look in his daughter's eyes, but was unable to do so. He let out a long sigh as he added,
No lethal force, if possible.
Atlas dropped to his hands and knees in order to avoid the body that flew over his head.
Hey now! A little warning next time!
Tragedy's body hit the ground hard and skid for a dozen feet before he managed to find his words.
Please tell me you have some magic trick up your sleeve that can help here.
He was back on his feet, using the momentum to rush towards the robot closest to him.
Well, if you want a trick...
Ellis shook his head violently as he began scribbling on the dusty street.
Now is not the time. Maybe later. And what I do is an art form. You can't rush art.
Resistance is ill-advised.
Atlas looked up to see a group of copper men were closing in.
On second thought...
He licked his lips as he rushed to scratch out the rest of the rune and slammed a palm down on it. A small, glowing orb shot out of the ground, hovering at head height before it detonated into a supernova of white light that seared into the robot's tiny photon receptors, completely scrambling coherent visual readings.
Wah!
Tragedy doubled over in pain, his fist shoved against his face. Uncovering his own eyes, Atlas reached out and grabbed the king's bodyguard by his arm, hauling him past the dazed robots and towards the open hangar.
Oh, don't be such a baby!
He pushed the blinded man towards the ship and turned, slamming the massive doors shut behind them. Tragedy smacked into the hull of the small warship and bounced off.
I can't see anything!
Like I tell everyone, give it a good rub and you'll feel better.
Atlas thrust his hand against the seam between the doors, heating up the metal until it fused together.
That won't hold them for long, so we need to get moving.
He tossed a few bulky items in front of the door for good measure. Clawing his way along the vessel, Tragedy found the gangplank.
How am I supposed to fly this thing if I can't see?
Something heavy impacted the barricade, causing the entire building to shake. Atlas glanced over to his still-blinded companion.
Any chance you could walk me through the process?
Cobblestones were ripped from the streets by the speed of several robots and their armored treads. Chester and Danny clung to their machine as they all but flew through the city. Thankfully, the repair hangar wasn't far from where they were, and the end of their harrowing ride was close. As his robot ground to a halt, Chester tumbled free, landing to the ground on his knees. He blinked away the tears from his eyes and nodded at his chauffeur in relief.
Thank you. That was impressive, to say the least.
The robot gave a short salute and fell in with several others that were arriving on the scene. Chester turned towards Repair Bay 6, where several copper bodies had piled in to attempt to dismantle the massive doors. He climbed to his own feet and approached.
Report!
The robot closest to him, embellished with tin paneling made to look like dusty metal coveralls, spun to face him.
Sir, the fugitives are still inside. We are attempting to breach the entryway, but they have set up a barricade.
Chester hid his laughter at the robot's hysterical country accent with a clever cough. Voice modulation wasn't an uncommon choice among the robots, but this one was a bit over the top.
You're certain?
Yes, sir. There is only one other exit, and we have it sealed off.
Chester nodded.
And the ship?
Operational. But the navigation system was in need of repairs. We have, however, detected the sound of engines being engaged. But with no other exit, we are hopeful this standoff will end soon.
Despite the severity of the situation, he couldn't help but smile. Possibly that had been the intent of this unit's chosen identity. He was ready to congratulate the machines on a job well done, but he had barely lifted his hand when several muffled whoomps drew their attention back to the building as a barrage of cannonballs erupted through the roof. As the steel projectiles hit the arc of their trajectory and began to fall, Danny grabbed her father and dove behind a large pile of metal scrap.
Take cover!
The earth around them exploded, small craters detonating the landscape into shards of cobblestone and brick flying like shrapnel. One unlucky robot took a shot to his lower portion, tearing through his treads like tissue paper. As the dust cleared, Danny stood to see the balloon of the airship forcing its way up through what remained of the roof, sloughing off timbers and roofing tiles as it emerged. She thrust a hand up towards the ship, turning to the remaining robots.
Don't let them escape!
As the wooden hull of the ship came into view, the unit in coveralls loosed a grappling hook from its chest cavity. The metal hook sailed gracefully through the air before puncturing the side of the deck. He hauled back, and the line went taut, the hook digging into the outer railing of the vessel. One by one, the other robots followed, latching onto the ship and arresting its ascent. Her heart plummeted when Danny saw him. Her brother, Theodore, grabbed hold of one of the hooks and wrenched it free with his bare hands. A second man appeared next to him, someone she didn't recognize, and pointed a finger down towards her. A bolt of flame shot from his hand, causing her and the robot behind her to disengage in order to dodge the attack. One by one, tragedy ran across the deck, ripping free hooks as his companion continued to shoot fire down at their would-be captors. It didn't take long before the ship began to rise. They were breaking free. Danny rushed for the abandoned tether still dangling from the ship and grabbed hold. Hand over hand, she began to climb. Her father called out to her from below, but blood was pumping in her ears, and she continued. She needed to reach her brother. She had to reason with him. She was nearly to the edge of the ship when Tragedy's face appeared above her, his hand already pulling her hook free. They froze as their eyes met. So much had been left unsaid between them when they parted ways. He had betrayed her, and in turn, she him. It had even come to blows. But what family didn't fight? They were twins, nearly inseparable once. But as she opened her mouth to speak, perhaps to forgive him or beg for forgiveness, nothing came out. A freckled face appeared next to her brother.
Explodey spell!
He pointed a finger, and a ball of flame rushed towards her. With a small scream of surprise, Danny let go and plummeted towards the ground. She landed less than gracefully on her back, the impact cratering outwards. Shattering cracks streaked through the cobblestones. And as she watched the ship rise up into the sky, she knew the only thing that was really hurt was her pride. And maybe her heart. She had been so close.
Danny!
Jester dropped to his knees by her side.
Are you all right?
She nodded. I'm fine. Now that the adrenaline was wearing off, Danny could feel a pounding in her head and a sharp pain from her recently injured shoulder. She had likely made it worse, but the pain did little to cover the agony of her failure. Chester looked up at the ship, growing smaller in the distance as it made its way towards the edge of the city.
What in the scholar's name was that? Fire from nothing!
That, my new friend, was magic. Chester looked over his shoulder to see the bespectacled man from earlier lingering near the edge of the chaos with several followers in tow. These were the locals that had been demanding an audience all day.
Magic?
He frowned, pulling himself and his daughter to their feet.
Such fairy tales are best saved for children. It doesn't exist.
As the man approached, he noticed for the first time that they all wore black robes with a familiar holy sigil draped about their necks, the same one the illuminated path now used, a feather across an open book. The man shook his head.
Perhaps not in your world, but here it most certainly does. A heretical practice that my order has dedicated their lives to fighting. One that our common enemy is well versed in.
Common enemy?
Chester scoured his mind, only for it to land on a single name.
You mean Elias?
Extending his hand, the monk nodded.
The scholar has seen your struggle and sent us to aid in your time of need. The day has come to welcome you back into the fold of the Brotherhood, my son. Knowledge is power.
With a shuddering breath, a hacking cough, and a long, drawn-out wheeze, Undine hobbled her way along the river's bank. Her body ached, and even with the aid of the long branch she used as a walking stick, her left ankle threatened to give out under her weight. In the chaos of the night, they had been separated, and with as far downstream as she had been carried, she had no clue of what had become of her ward. But she was determined to find her, alive or otherwise. For now, she followed the river back to where it all had started, watching for any sign, calling her name whenever her breath allowed it. Her tired eyes caught sight of drag marks up to an abandoned campsite on the shore. A dead fire pit, footprints, and a discarded shawl. Pyra's shawl, the one she had been wearing when the chaos had struck. Undine lunged for the object, scrabbling in the sand to reach it. Pyra was alive! The fabric was torn and stained with splatters of blood. Not a good sign. Forcing herself back to her feet, she looked at the surrounding footprints. One set of tracks headed back upriver, towards the city that had appeared from nowhere. Bootprints, larger than Pyra would wear. A second set of tracks went east, towards the rolling hills and grasslands. She knelt down and pressed her fingers into the nearest depression. These were much deeper than the ones heading off into the city, almost as if extra weight were being carried. Her eyes followed the tracks until they disappeared into the brush.
Hold on, Your Majesty!
She let out a feral growl as she set off.
I shall find you!
We thank you for joining us for this chapter of the novel Of Portals and Portents. Book 4 by Leslie Herron in this ongoing series available here on Tall Tale TV. You can find links in the description to where you can listen to all her books and novellas, with new chapters appearing as they are being written and recorded.
Sounds like they're getting close. All right, now pull on the lever next to the gauge. Lever. Got it. Not that one. The one next to the gauge. Right. Okay. What is a gauge?
Just move over. Even blind, I'm better off doing it myself.
Hey, well, if you're gonna be like that...
Make the blind guy do that thing, of course.
Kevin! Look, our furry little friend is back.
Oh, great. Yeah, you play with the cat while I try to fly the airship.
Does Kevin want to go on the airship?
Oh, I bet you do.
I'm gonna take you home with me and show you to my bear. Of course I won't let him eat you.
Who's a good kitty?
You are. You are.
We could use a hand over here. We can't tell which lever is the cable release and which is the...
Kevin! Oh, come back!
Right. So that makes this one the cable release.
Could we just...
No! We're not waiting for the cat. Kevin's a stupid name anyway.